Disclaimer: the views expressed by the hosts of Insider Exchange do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or on our platform. Nothing shared on this platform should be read as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure you fully understand the risk and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions. Can I go and play now?
Mother's Day. What did we do? Flowers, food, some shopping, some loungewear stuff. Yeah, just normal Mom's Day
so
treats.
What I did was sneaky stuff.
Mm.
Coffee shops. And empty, because you can't take your mother to a coffee shop for Mother's Day. You got to take her to a proper establishment.
Yeah.
Lay on the shit.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife and I went to my favorite coffee shop Sunday morning. No one there, just me and
Happy
her,
days.
One other peep.
Uh-huh. There you go.
Yeah.
See? It worked. Celebrated Mother's Day. Yeah, no, Mother's Day is always... I think someone, who said it? Someone had a whole thing about it saying Mother's Day is second most popular holiday, I think, in the world after Christmas.
Yeah.
Look, mothers are important. Apparently more important than fathers. I know who said it. It was American comedian Ali Sadiq. He's a great comedian.
He's fun.
Yeah, he's fun. He said it. He was like, look, after Jesus, it's your mother, and there's a bunch of other things in between, and then Father's Day is like 20th or something in the world in terms of most popular holidays. I don't know if that data still stands, but anyway, let's kick things off. Let's get the show on the road.
Unfiltered. 98, our current show collapsing.
The privilege of welcoming one of our good friends into studio.
So not even Buffett listens to Buffett.
Sue me, China, if you must.
1 or 22 on AC, but you're not getting that at home.
And there's quite a bit to discuss.
The stock is cheap.
The last podcast I did.
Introduce me.
I'm Jimmy Munar.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Into useful updates.
Yeah.
Timer started.
Why did you pause?
Because the timer started.
So our favorite governor.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Everyone knows who our favorite governor is. We only have one, surely. Pretty much.
For now.
And girls' schools have governors. But anyway, our favorite governor is giving a lecture to the US about their debt.
Yes!
I love it. Because everyone's like, ooh, like the South African, every budget, like, ooh, the South African debt to GDP is getting into the high 70s. Ooh, this is really, really bad. Mm. America's sitting there with 125%. Japan, 220%. And we're at 70 odd and we're the failures.
Yeah, we're the bad guys in the room. Absolutely.
Yeah, this is just, anyway, so the governor was like, no, middle finger, bye! Go away, America.
It's the double standards for me,
it's
right?
It's the double standards.
It's the double standards on debt. It's the double standards on development. No, you cannot you cannot develop using fossil fuels.
Or chop down trees.
Really?
America chopped down every tree they
had. Exactly. Now we have the largest coal reserves in the world, mm-hmm. but we can't use them.
No. Bad.
Makes no sense. Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving on. Dis-Chem has a new health hub. They've opened their first health hub.
What's a health hub?
It's really, they've just revamped the stores. Remember we did an episode on rebrandings.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is in some ways something similar to that, right? There's a new look to the store. They do their insurance services inside there. They do their clinic services inside there, their normal pharmaceutical services. It's a very new look store. I think the first one was opened in Melrose Arch. So brings back the question around whether or not revamps are necessary. And also thinking about Dis-Chem's footprint, how many stores are you going to have to now redo this to, and how much is that going to cost you?
Yeah. Well, they could roll it at their fancy stores and new stores.
Okay, and then what? The rest of the old stores don't get any love.
Yeah. I don't know. I was somewhere on Friday. We're in Rosebank. We haven't got time. So quick. This was like, I used to shop at Checkers Emerentia, and then I came to Rosebank, and this was like such a fancy Checkers. Like, whoa, Rosebank Checkers. Now there's that one at Santon, XXV or something like that. There's a Checkers there. I didn't go in because my credit card would have died. Anyway, LIV Golf has lost the Saudi Public Investment Fund.
Yeah, that happened a while ago, but still relevant.
But I mean, like, so LIV Golf, which in itself is a weird thing, but okay, whatever. Apparently golfers were having a fight.
It's experiential experiences, Si.
Okay, but what's the Saudis doing? Because the Saudis doing their sports washing. What they finished washing now? Because they lost the Grand Prix as well because of the war. The Grand Prix was supposed to be last month. Yes. No Grand Prix. Now they lose the golf. What's left?
Well, they didn't lose the golf. They just walked away from the golf, really. They still got soccer.
Okay, they didn't lose it. Okay, they just walked away. Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, they walked away from the golf. Well, why?
Maybe they got bored of it.
Too many white men in funny pants.
I don't know. Maybe you can't play golf in the desert.
I hadn't thought of that. It's just one great big bunker,
When you put it that way, that's certainly something interesting.
City peeps, okay. No, good.
Business schools. South Africa has three business schools amongst the top 100 business schools in the world.
Yo.
Any guess which three of those business schools, or which three are
I'm just going to be cliched and say it's Wits, Gibbs, and the one in Cape Town.
You've got two out of three, right?
Which one am I wrong?
Wits.
Whoa.
Right. WBS is not on that list. UCT Business School is on that list. Tux Gibbs is on that list. So Tux Gordon Institute for Business Sciences is on there. And the third one actually tops the list more than 10 places above the other two South African ones. Regenis? Henley Business School.
Oh, Henley.
Yeah.
Is Henley South African?
Well, it's considered as part of the South African lists, according to the latest update. I think it ranks 57th.
Yo, and no Wits.
So yeah, no Wits.
So I remember I used to do a lot of work there, and Ntuli and Gubi was the boss man. Mm. And then he went and became the finance minister in Zimbabwe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting times.
Okay, so South African Poultry Association. We have a lot of associations. Do you remember the boards?
We probably have associations for associations. Yes.
Do you remember like the bread board, the chicken board, the banana board, et cetera, et cetera? And then they all went away because they were, and now we just got associations.
Yeah,
They're suing about chicken imports.
Yeah.
I mean, old Chris Scutter has been going on about these for as long as I've known Chris Scutter, and I've known Chris Scutter 20 years.
A very long time.
Yes, yes, yes. Mostly Brazil, sometimes Europe as well, but mostly dumping from Brazil.
Mm. All the time it's America.
My question is always, how can they make it cheaper and then we can do it? And they've got to get it across the world. I know why. That's what I remember, because they eat one part and they pay a premium, and then there's the second part that no one wants.
Mm. So this one particularly relates to America in the sense that it was a deal struck a couple of years ago. So we had a trade deal with America where we got duty-free access to export into America, and in return, we had to take a certain amount of chicken into South Africa as an import. So I don't know how that's going to fare, considering we're on the naughty list in America, and we seem to be the only country on that naughty list.
But we're on the naughty list, and now we're still taking their cheap chicken.
Yes!
No, man, we want the only chicken we want from America is that religious chicken, man. It's so tasty. There was one in Durban. What's it called? They're not open on Sundays. Can't remember.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
We'll figure it out. We'll come back to that because do you remember the BRTs? So the bus rapid transit systems. If you have been in any of the major metros, I mean, they all go by different names, right? So I think in Johannesburg, it's Rea Vaya. It's Arieng in Pretoria.
In Joburg, in Durban, it's called Never Gonna Happen Chicken Film.
Never gonna happen. Well, you might be right about that name, because after 20 plus years and several billions of rands that have been put into the BRT systems, the government, by their own admission, acknowledged that these systems have failed and they are considering dumping them and just getting rid of them. Now, ordinarily,
they built the stuff on Louis Burton more than 10 years ago, because I was living there at that point in time. It's still there. There's still not a bus nigh gone down it.
They've been building the Sandton one since before the G20, it's still not done. Anyway, we move very swiftly along. We don't know when that's going to happen. Yeah, but
African Bank Eskom. So this is really bad for African Bank. They were going to take over the home loan book from Eskom.
Mm.
And that's got to be a biggie. That's got to be tens of thousands of staff who get an average salary of like over $500,000 or close to 800 or something per staff member. So a lot of good quality and nice home loans there. And the deal fell through. And I don't know why. I was digging around and couldn't get details. But it's a biggie, a baddie for African Bank. They also lost their CEO. Things are getting...
So this is the thing. African Bank's been on this big turnaround drive since the first failed African Bank. And you thought this was these sorts of deals were going to be, you know, the anchoring point of that business because they looked to list. Mm. Now we don't know what's going to happen with that. They don't have a CEO. They don't. Well, they've got an interim CEO, but they don't have anything else. We're running out of time quite desperately. The community scheme ombuds services that we know for gated communities and estates that kind of governs how those communities are managed and facilitated. Mm-hmm. In the past, it's always been known that that's kind of the only thing you've got in terms of reprieve as a homeowner. Mm-hmm. Turns out it isn't. There's a new High Court ruling that says you can still approach the courts, even beyond the community scheme's ombuds, if you have a complaint. So that opens it up for people living in estates and those living in gated communities. That's all we're going to say on that.
That is cool. No, that is like a... So it's Chick-fil-A. There was one that opened in Durban. It must be more than... It must be late 90s. Mm-hmm. It makes KFC look like an amateur.
Okay, I have 9 seconds to tell you that the pre-export verification of conformity program, the PVOC that we had, SABS is saying they're not targeting China on that. That's the update. All right. We are getting into our deep dive. We're revisiting an old but important conversation around the true cost of education. We've previously covered this from different perspectives, and we're going to be taking a look at this in light of some recent developments. We've seen some increases in government subsidies towards universities. We've seen universities potentially providing more bursaries to individuals, but we still have a severe shortage of capacity in the educational space. And it seems as though by the day, the cost of education keeps rising, potentially even faster than the petrol price. So, and that says something, right? Before we get into this, as always, usual disclaimers, not financial advice, opinions welcomed, and we're going to see what we make of the conversation. We left this off many, many moons ago on kind of how much private schools cost, how much public schools cost. We got lots of opinions from our insider community around how much they were paying for schooling and whether or not they were able to afford it, right? So I thought, let's take a look at this and see, does it make sense? Does it warrant what you get in return? And not just at a private school level, not just at a high school or a primary school level, but all the way through to tertiary education. Because we've had this debate about is university studies necessary? Is tertiary education necessary? Should we be upskilling artisanal skills like the plumbers, like the electricians, because they cost less than university degrees might, or how we navigate those conversations, right? All we know is at some point you have to weigh up whether or not it is worthwhile to put in the amount of money versus what you get as a return on investment. Now, there are many, many debates, and these debates date back years. I come from a family of educators, and they'll tell you education is the most important thing. Nobody's disputing that. Yeah. But is the cost of education getting out of hand? That is the real question here.
So, I mean, the answer is sure, it probably is. And I mean, I think back to, and let's be clear. So when I was at school, and I went to school during apartheid, so we were only providing education for a small minority of the country, but I was paying $10 a term. I didn't get a particularly brilliant education, but I was paying $10 a term, and we were, there was a fancy word for it, I can't remember what, poor relative, so we didn't even pay the $10.
Your school fees was 40 rand a year, and that was subsidized?
To zero. This was 1987, I did matriculate.
40 rand a year, Simon.
It was free. So.
Hang on, let's not move off that topic. Okay. Let's compare that with a boarding school today, let's not take Hilton because apparently
let's check what Pantone Boys High, because that was the horrible school I went to. Boys High School, annual fee.
I'll give you the price of St. Albans College, which is a boys' private school in Pretoria.
So Pantone is now 55,000 rand a year.
Okay, so we've gone from 40 rand a year to 55,000 rand a year in the space of 30 years.
It's a quintile 5 public school. What does that mean? Sets its own fees to maintain high standards.
Right. So in the course of almost 40 years, we've gone from 40 rand to 55,000.
I'm sure that's more than inflation.
The math doesn't need to,
I don't need to check that.
No, we don't need to check that.
Yeah.
So then again, when we look at the cost of education, where do we draw the line on what is reasonable? Because now, I'll give you a simple example. The government recently came out and gave the universities some financing so that they could fund students. So they gave them, I think, something to the tune of several hundred million rands. I'll get the exact figure for you, but effectively it worked out to 100,000 rand per year for 5,000 students. So about I think it was 520 million rand. Let me get that figure. But that was again then for universities to subsidize students on their part. But 100,000 rand, anyone that's paid university fees knows that that buys you a little around a year on a basic degree with accommodation and those sorts of things, which you might need depending on where you are. It doesn't buy you the entire degree.
Yeah, and I mean, the numbers are staggering. I mean, there's an article here from February which says actually the average is closer to $7,000 a month for a government high school.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got two kids, let's say, $7,000 a month, that's 14. You've got all the other bits and pieces, right? Like I mean, I don't know, we used to go and play rugby and go on these things and et cetera, and I don't think we ever, never paid for them. I don't know. I mean, it was like when we played rugby at another school, we would all go in a bus, and when we played rugby at home, there would be oranges at halftime and stuff. And I don't, it was like, it just, so, but these days there's other costs. I know from my niece and nephew, they've got to have all this kit and stuff, and you've got to have the right bag, and you've got to have the right lunchbox, like all of this sort of nonsense. So it's not seven a month. It's like,
it's a lot more. You've got to have transport to get you there or pick you up if your parents can't.
It's conceivably a quarter of a million for two kids to go a year for high school.
Comfortably, quite easily. So this is the thing. Those figures that I was telling you about, those figures were, I did have them kind of accurate. 520 million rand bursary scheme from the services CETA that was given to the universities of South Africa. And it's as part of a bursary scheme to be rolled out to cover 5,200 university students for their start their studies. So effectively, 100,000 rand a student for their first year or first 2 years or whatever of schooling. Still, doesn't get you through school, doesn't get you through everything. And if we cover meals, that gets you a lot less in terms of distance. And we're going to kind of have this situation for a 3-4 year period. A basic degree is an undergrad is a 3-year undergrad, unless you're doing perhaps a law degree that might be a 4-year undergrad, right? So let's say a 3-year undergrad, let's say you need 300,000 over the 3 years. Yes, there's a debate that once you're in the workplace, you will have the skill set for that. But does it justify being charged the 300,000 rand after having been charged? Let's say you went to a Pinetown Boys where you were charged 55,000 rand a year, or you went to a St. Albans in Pretoria where you were charged more than 300,000 rand a year for the duration of your middle schooling before the tertiary. At what point do we average it out or balance it out? If we take a simple student that runs, whether you're running private or public, from grade R all the way through to qualifying with a basic level degree, surely it's a million and more?
Yeah. I mean, short answer, yes. I mean, absolutely it is. And it comes to the question. I mean, it is a... It's too much. I think it's too much money. I mean, education, along with things like healthcare and the like, should just be, you know, basic human right and therefore free, and quality. But that's not going to happen, and it happens in very few places around the world. Although it does happen in some, but it is important. You know, there's all these stories of, oh, so and so is a billionaire and dropped out of school. Yeah, but most kids who dropped out of school are not billionaires. To be very clear about it, you need an education. Mm-hmm. It goes beyond, I mean, there's all the networking and stuff. I mean, to be clear, the only people who came out of Pinetown was Wackhead Simpson and Mark Wheatman. oh, and there was a rugby player. That's like it, like three. So, yes, you can network and stuff, but do you need a good education? Sure, agreed. Has it become expensive? Yes, and then I don't know how we thread that thread.
But this is, to your point, Si, you mentioned that other countries have gotten it right to give out free education. I remember the promises that were made around free education.
Yeah, yeah.
There are many of the youth of South Africa that remember the promises that were made around free education. Mm-hmm. I remember a time where I was at Wits University, and the first time the conversations around fees must fall happened, I was involved in those conversations as well. And the question again around that, it had nothing to do with just wanting things for free and all of that. I suppose at some point that conversation comes up very minutely or so, but it does have an impact on where you go into, because if you're a million rand in debt as a newly qualified graduate, you haven't got a car, you haven't got a house, you haven't got a job, you haven't got anything, but you've got all this debt. If you took it on as debt, if your parents were able to pay for you throughout those schooling days and all of that, you're very fortunate in that respect. But many South Africans cannot afford university.
So, I mean, my university, which mostly was a Technikon, I think was 1,200 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then 400 for books.
And then...
But it comes back to, I mean, do you need an education? Yes.
And at what cost?
But Well, the view seems to be, and when I say seems to be, I mean, obviously, just from the numbers, the view seems to be at any cost. But actually, no, because what we then do is we create an elite to become more and more elite, right? Because they can afford the education, so they get the education, so they get the positions, etc. And we get a dual-class society, which we kind of have, don't we? I mean, we are pretty much, all we're doing is just pushing those two classes further apart rather than together. Because... So let's park the building context, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you've got two people to employ. One has a B-grade matric. One has a fancy, you know, four-year degree from a fancy university, even an unfancy university. You know which one you're probably employing. The person with a matric can get a job, T's and C's apply, but they're going to come in at a way different position and are always just going to be behind.
But here's the thing. Just because you have the university degree doesn't make you the smartest person in the room. This is what you've discovered, and this is what you see in the working world.
People that have
work experience that don't necessarily have the master's degree are the ones that are training the one with the PhD in the workplace, depending on, of course, where you work and what the workplace looks like, right? So, and again, this underscores the importance of things like artisanal skills.
Well,
if we talk about electricians, if we talk about plumbers, if I have a PhD in electrical engineering and I go into a real place work environment where an electrician has got 20 years of experience, my theoretical knowledge of what the textbook says is limited to the textbook. That gentleman or lady has had 20 years of practical experience navigating certain issues.
So then shouldn't we just abandon tertiary education in its entirety, and whatever you want to be, you go in an you want to be an accountant? Cool. Go spend 5 years working in an accounting department at a business, whether it be, you know, as an intern, as a, et cetera, et cetera. And at the end of it, have a standardized exam that is not some completely crazy fee. This is what I always say to universities. Like, they have these DPs, and I don't know what DP stands for, but you've got to, like, attend lectures and writing. And I'm like, no, the kid must just write the exam at the end, and if they pass, they pass. Universities are like, no, no, you must hand in this. And
yes, you must have mandatory kind of milestones that you've achieved over the course of a term.
Pass it or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, I think, you know, let's do away with all of this stuff. And I appreciate that there are people who are really good lecturers and teachers, and and you might go and do your internship at a place where the person doesn't teach you, etc. But truthfully, you also get lecturers at universities and schools who are brain-numbingly boring. So, I mean, it you know, we've become almost, I mean, I can't help thinking that education has just become too elitist. And part of the reason around that is that we, with population growth, we just don't have, you know, what's our population? Doubled in X number of years. Our universities have not. Hence the likes of Stadio coming in.
Hence the shortage you have, where universities have 30,000 applications a year and they can only take 5,000 people.
Exactly. And this is, you know, and to be clear, I mean, I've got friends whose kid is going into university next year in the States. And it's the same thing. I mean, you know, you're applying to universities where they have an acceptance rate of 4%. You know, 96% of you get no. And of that 4%, half of them are going to be from parents who either have paid lots of money or bribed lots of money. Turns out bribing's big. No, like really.
It's
like
a global thing.
But in education, like, I mean, they don't call it bribing. You do clever things. You, I don't know, you make it.
Contributions towards the university. You donate a building. You put a name on something. Look, we've seen it happen. If you've watched the TV series Billions, a very good example in there as well.
Exactly. So, but education has become elitist, and it shouldn't be. Education should just be, I mean, back in the days it was, I don't know, wasn't it the nuns and the priests who were doing it?
Do you think that the elitist status that we've now attached to it is part of the reason why some people have moved away from it? So in the education space, from a teaching perspective, right, there are some brilliant educators and teachers and people that come once in a lifetime that you remember for a lifetime. This teacher taught me this, I'll never forget it, those sorts of things. Then there are people who kind of come into the space, do it, get tired of it, walk away. Or there's just some people that have been disheartened by situations. I'm trying to teach my students. I don't have the quality of textbooks that I feel my students need. The government is not supporting me. They keep promising me the textbooks. Every year we have a textbook scandal about textbooks that are not delivered in South Africa. Somehow we still continue to have those scandals in 2026, right? So along the way, there are various problems with the system inherently. No system is perfect, whether you're in private or public.
Sure, sure.
We're not distinguishing here. Mm. But do you think then that because of all of these stumbling blocks and bottlenecks along the way, that we start to lose what we should be focusing on where it relates to education, and that is imparting the knowledge, and we start to shift perhaps more towards commercialization of the situation, of the business, of the model? Because at some point, yes, no, we can't underscore the fact that it's considered a business in many respects, right? Especially from the private sector's perspective. But even from a public sector perspective, NSFIS, prime example that we've spoken about recently, paying for other organizations to do the work that they are tasked with doing. Now you're under administration and investigation as an organization, and you're supposed to be the bridge that kind of brings that gap that you mentioned, Si. You brought that gap into question around that widening divide. NSFIS is supposed to be closing that divide down, but are they?
Well, no, I don't think they are. And I think education is probably actually, I like your point. I mean, education is there to close that gap. And I think it's probably actually in many ways widening it. And I don't, I mean, you know, okay, so it's easy for us to sit here and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know what the elegant solution is. I mean, I don't know how we sort of easily say snip, snip, everything sort of resolved.
Okay. Clearly, we don't have the answers, which means this educational deep dive should have gone into Make It Make Sense, because that's our section for no answers. But on that note, we're going to leave the deep dive on that note. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We absolutely have a huge community that has been outspoken about this topic in the past, and the only way we really get to the bottom of these sorts of problems is together as a community. So share your thoughts. Let us know what you think we should be doing as a country to better our education system, to perhaps make education more affordable. Should we be moving digital? Should we be incorporating other elements that then reduce the cost of education? We don't have all the answers, but we know that we can get to them as a community. We're going to leave the deep dive on that note. We're going to get into Make It Make Sense, because that's where we shine. We're wrapping things up with our Make It Make Sense. We are going to get into some things that seemingly don't make sense. Si doesn't sound very confident, and I love it. We've got a couple of things to make sense of locally and internationally. Let's start with food trailers. I saw...
Love me a food trailer.
I saw a tweet around the Metro Police. South African Metro Police are impounding food trailers, right? So they're wrapping up food trucks, people... hard-earned living, taking the food trucks away, apparently is in violation of bylaws, etc.
Oh, no, there's no health and safety shit there. There's just food.
Yeah, but again, back to the double standards. You can't be at the traffic light when the traffic light is broken to usher traffic, which is part of the bylaws that you're supposed to, but you can go impound someone's food trailer when they're trying to earn a living. You can't go after enforcing bylaws on the illegal spaza shop owners in South Africa, but you can go after the honest person trying to make a living. I get the whole debate around us needing to kind of enforce bylaws and be strict about things. Once you let one thing slide, where do you draw the line and all of that, right? But are we being selective here around what is being enforced
not? We are totally being selective, and food trucks rock, man.
Absolutely.
When I was at 44, there was one that had quarters. Man, dude, those things were killing you on their own, and not because of bugs. And then there was one with doing braais, and when I was in the city, there was a curry one.
Yeah.
Man, food trucks rock. Now, I mean, to be clear, they're breaching all sorts of bylaws and they shouldn't, and they should get permission. I bet you $10 that an ability to try and get permission
is
the problem.
Yeah.
I once had an idea for a coffee, hot chocolate drink business in Durban. And so I just was trying to inquire as to how one would, you know, theoretically get permissions to do it. And the answer is no. It was just like a barrage of red tape and phone numbers of people you must phone, and you would phone these people, and the phone was never answered, and you email them, so I couldn't get permission.
So then maybe, just maybe, if we're going to enforce bylaws in South Africa, let's have systems in place so that the service providers and the operators that make their livelihoods off of these things are able to abide by said laws before you take away their businesses.
Correct, Amanda.
Hey, look, we made sense of something.
Hey.
I helped. TikTok warehouses have been raided. So TikTok Shop, You know, you can go onto TikTok and sell things, and then people can order from you and kind of you ship to them and all of those. So in the United Kingdom, there was a major raid where they seized luxury counterfeit goods that were being sold on TikTok. So bought somewhere else, stored in a warehouse, and then being distributed via TikTok sales and the like. Now, interesting raid in and of itself, but what I want you to make sense of, Sai, is this is something that's not going to go away. This is something that happens in South Africa. It happens in every country in the world where people are reselling or setting up to be distributors. And we had the conversation around whether or not things are authentic coming from certain countries, whether luxury goods are still being made the way that we thought they were being made. We did a whole episode, folks, on luxury goods with some examples, real examples that I came back from China with last year. So dig into that if you've missed that conversation. But on the TikTok, on the TikTok shop warehouses, or the warehouse that was raided in the UK, more than 26,000 designer items were found, exceeding more than $1.5 million. Now, small value in terms of $1.5 million, but I suppose if you're passing them off as authentic.
Well, TikTok, I mean, what did they say? That whole warehouse burnt down was $8.
That was Temu.
Oh, okay.
same, same, but different. So, hey, yes.
Hang on. Actually, we got to back up because you've been saying TikTok and I've been nodding my head, but I've been thinking Temu and the like. TikTok is selling me stuff?
Yes, we've got a TikTok shop. We can put merch in the TikTok shop on our socials.
Do we have a TikTok shop?
We have never set one up, but we could if you wanted us to.
We bet on it.
We could put shirts that say Insider Exchange. We can say Jimsim on the shirts. We can do our faces on shirts. We can do a whole bunch of stuff.
Yo. Oh, okay, buried the lead there. Okay. So this is not TikTok selling it. This is Jimsim selling fake stuff on TikTok.
On TikTok, yes. Because everybody's on TikTok, right?
I would not sell fake stuff. I would just sell overpriced stuff.
Authentic, just overpriced.
Yes. Authentic Simon T-shirt for far too much money.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the thing, right? So I think in the authentic world.
And it was fake and people were surprised.
No, the fake part wasn't the surprising part. It was the raid that surprised
people. That definitely was the surprising part.
The raid is always the surprise. Mm-hmm. How they found the warehouse, we don't really know. I'm sure they were looking at it. But effectively what happens is Jimsim does this. Mm-hmm. And on TikTok, we live stream, hey guys, this is what we're selling. This is what we're advertising. Gotcha. Jump into our shop, buy from our shop. It's basically like running a Spotify shop or whatever it is that you want to run for yourself. So Shopify.
Ooh,
Spotify would have come after us for that. No, not those guys. So yeah, the raid, okay, but is it going to bring an end to this?
No.
Unlikely.
It never does. Unlikely. They've been raiding these places since the pharaohs and they're still, I bet you, they had fake pyramids.
Well, kind of like how we misplaced 200 kilos of...
Here's my most favorite fun fact of cocaine.
Didn't want to bring it up, but now that you have, we might have...
Oh. My most favorite fun fact of all time, Cleopatra.
Uh-huh.
She had Egyptologists to help her understand what the pyramids were because she lived closer to us today than she lived to the pyramids and she didn't know what they were either.
Huh?
Huh? Exactly.
What? Queen Cleopatra. That's Cleopatra.
That one. Julius is Clea.
Yeah.
She was born 2,500 years after the pyramids, and that was 2,000 years ago. She is alive closer to us than the building of the pyramids.
Huh.
She also looked at them and went,
Wonder what those are.
Need an Egyptologist.
Okay, look at that. We're just adding things to make it make sense. Because we can't make sense of it.
So the warehouse raid makes sense, except they've been doing it forever, so why?
When I saw it, I immediately thought of the cocaine raid, bust, missing pieces,
some cop needed stuff for Mother's Day, and making it make sense. Some copper needed stuff for Mother's Day. He's a cheapskate, thought raid the warehouse, problem solved.
Insider community, South Africans, those watching this, please don't get your mother cocaine
I'm not talking about the cocaine. I'm talking about the TikTok warehouse Wade. That policeman, not our policeman.
Wow. Okay. That took an unexpected turn. Sorry, folks. We're going to try and get back on track. Final update that we're trying to make sense of while we still have our wits about us. Eskom is playing dirty with EVs, right? So think about the EV landscape. We need vehicles, we need infrastructure, and you need the electricity to charge the vehicle,
and
right?
And driving down to Durban, I just recently saw some infrastructure, some EV infrastructure being built.
The charge guys are doing
building
that.
Stuff, like there was one, carry on.
So,
disrupted.
Here's how Eskom wants to have their competitive advantage. They're now, whether it's threatening or negotiating or bribing, they're now saying that they all obviously wanted to get into the infrastructure element of it. They even signed an agreement with BYD to roll out infrastructure. They're now wanting to have preferential rates given to those that charge using the Eskom stations as opposed to the other stations or the other charging units, the other charging infrastructure out there. Now, surely when you are the one providing the power for everybody, you already have an unfair advantage, and then you want to double down on that?
Yeah, so why do they get... Yeah, I mean, Eskom should just, like, be stum, right? This is the best thing that ever happened for them. People want to use their power.
No, they want it on their terms.
So they want to get a better rate for their people when it's got their name... Well, no, that's just stupid.
Well, there's
The one I saw at... REITs they had solar panels all over the place.
Yeah, so now effectively what Eskom is saying is, think about a Rosebank Mall, right? You have charging stations that were installed by Volvos or by any other companies, external companies and all of that. Now Eskom is saying that if these malls, even malls are included in this, if malls then have more Eskom charging bays in their facilities or in their vicinity, they will give them a preferential rate on the electricity that they buy. It's not as though they have the option of getting a preferential rate on the other ones anyway.
Yeah,
Eskom's the only one that can give preferential rates to people.
Really, really weird. I mean, no, nothing makes sense. Can we go back to the cocaine?
Let's go back to the cocaine. That makes more sense.
No, that makes no sense.
Playing dirty. Look, again, as you said, look, they must just be happy that people want their electricity. Now, of course, Eskom has put this in different terms from their perspective to suggest that, no, it's a strategic advantage and all of those things. But if you look at Eskom's track record on negotiated power agreements from smelters in particular, you can see that price points are highly, highly defendable when it's convenient. And then when it's time to sit in front of NERSA and explain why they need an increase, South Africans are stuck with more than 900% increases over the last couple of years.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
No. Dodge.
Awkward stuff. Can't make sense of.
No.
But
never makes sense with Eskom.
Never makes sense with Eskom. But silver lining is we have been able to make sense of warehouse raids and where the missing cocaine might be. That's where we're going to leave the show, folks.
Cocaine, the TikToks.
The TikToks. That's where we're going to leave the show, folks. This week's unfiltered opinion of the week is speed dating wrestling. Would you try it? In Brooklyn.
Hang on. I've got to do this slowly.
In Brooklyn, for a first date idea, you can take a date on a wrestling speed date where you get to speed date multiple people at once, and not only do you do that, you get to wrestle them at the same time.
No.
Just no.
Just no. No, son, no.
Come on, Si, listen to this. Listen,
no, I'm married.
Listen to the... Okay, not for you, right?
for other people, 100. For other people, you go. Right?
Here's the value proposition that's being put forward here, right?
There is no value proposition.
you get to flirt with everybody, you wrestle somebody, and you might leave in love.
Yeah.
I don't know if wrestling on a first date seems sensible in any respect.
Yeah, no, I no.
As a concept?
So speed dating was invented after I got married. So
doesn't matter. It's not relevant.
Doesn't do.
So you've never done it. We've never tried speed dating. Folks, if you have, let us know.
Or wrestling, we don't know what works.
So I have a couple of questions.
I have a lot of questions. But carry on.
If you're wrestling, right, and I mean...
Yeah, you see. Yeah.
Okay, we'll come back to this. That's the unfiltered opinion of the week. Investing isn't hard. Just try it.
This disclaimer. The views expressed by the host of Insider Exchange do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or on our platform. Nothing shared on this platform should be read as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange. Any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure you fully understand the risk and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions. Can I go and play now?